France, Germany, Italy and Romania support Ukraine receiving immediate official candidate status to join the European Union. The US stock indexes take a nosedive a day after the Federal Reserve's large interest rate hike aimed at containing runaway inflation. Also ahead, Iran, Russia and Turkey expressed their commitment to the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Syria during a meeting in the Kazakh capital, Astana. Thank you for joining us. Our top story, French President Emmanuel Macron says his country, alongside Italy, Germany and Romania, supports granting an immediate EU candidate status to Ukraine. Macron made the remarks at a joint news conference after meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The French president said Paris would step up arms deliveries to Kiev. Meanwhile, the Ukrainian president said he has given the visiting EU leaders sanctions proposals against Russia, calling on them to increase pressure on Moscow. Macron, the German Chancellor Scholz and Italian Prime Minister Draghi arrived in Kiev by train on Thursday morning. Upon arrival, Macron told reporters Ukraine must resist and win the war against Russia. Meanwhile, Russia says it hopes the visit is not just for pumping Ukraine with weapons, calling more arms useless for Kiev. Secretary General of the CIPI Foundation, Paolo Raffone, joined us earlier. He says the visit by three European leaders to Kiev represents the EU's different political sensitivities regarding Ukraine.
The three heads of government are visiting Ukraine, in fact, represent different sensitivities on the possibility to continue supporting Ukraine. The problem here is what is the end? Where are we going? What we want to achieve? And these three governments have different opinions on this issue. Moreover, the European sentiment is evidently split. It just came out yesterday, an ECFR research that shows that Europeans are deeply divided, with 35% requesting peace, which means end the war as soon as possible, and only 25% requesting justice, which means pressing more to get to a point to punish Russia. And this is clear in the minds of governments. It's not so much clear in the minds of the EU leadership, which is mostly on the shadow of a NATO approach, which is dictated by the United States. So further support, military support to Ukraine.
As the Russian and Ukrainian armies fight for control of the Luhansk region, our reporter Johnny Miller visits a village on the outskirts of Donetsk, which is caught in the middle of the artilleries between the opposing sides.
Humanitarian aid being loaded into a lorry. I'm heading with pro-Russian volunteers to a village near the front line, which is constantly under shelling in order to deliver much-needed supplies. Despite the destruction all around, incredibly, people still live here. We stop off next to the final checkpoint. Beyond is no man's land, the grey zone between the opposing armies. Artillery can be heard. It's unclear whether it's Russian or Ukrainian.
Now it is from both sides. Artillery duels. And we're in the middle. The shells are flying over our heads. And they might fall here, so let's just gradually move away.
Pieces of shrapnel like this are supposed to hit us. This one is small. They're bigger ones. Look how sharp it is. They cut through flesh like a sieve. These are Ukrainian gifts to our children. They're different shapes and sizes. You could keep it as a souvenir from Donbass.
Unexpectedly, in this wasteland, a bus pulls up. The man tells me his house was destroyed yesterday. He shows me his wounds. I asked him why he's come back. To get some documents and feed his cat, he says. A crowd is gathered at the drop-off point, hungry for the humanitarian aid.
There was that video showing a woman from Western Ukraine sitting on the road embracing her two children and asking, how could it be so that her house was destroyed by Russian shelling? She should ask the woman whose three children died in a bathroom from Ukrainian shelling how she felt. I also have children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. I want to live in peace here in Donbas, not watch all this going on.
It's noticeable here that most people are women and children. The men have joined the armies.
Now, the front line is only a few hundred meters away. There's a lot of emotion here, understandably, about this war. Some people here even tell me they have cousins who are fighting in the Ukrainian army, while their sons and husbands are fighting for the pro-Russians. This war has divided the country. It's also divided villages like this.
My son died on the 3rd of November. He'd been on the front line for 8 years. He went there in 2014 as a volunteer, and now he's dead. What for, I ask, what for?
Those who remain don't leave because it's their home, and they have nowhere else to go. They tell me this used to be a pleasant place to live. The same can be said of many other parts of Ukraine. The longer this war goes on, the more of this pleasant land will be destroyed. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
Now, the United States stock indexes take a sharp nosedive after the Federal Reserve reports its biggest interest rate hike since 1994. The Dow Jones S&P 500, along with the Nasdaq Composite and other growth shares, all slumped. On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve approved the largest interest rate increase, signaling an aggressive path to fight 40-year high inflation. This after the May Consumer Price Index showed inflation rose well over 8%. The Fed has shifted gears this year from propping up the U.S. economy during the pandemic to trying to plug off a surge in consumer prices. The Bank of England, meanwhile, has hiked its main interest rate for a fifth straight time as it forecasts inflation to soar further this year to above 11%. The bank raised the cost of borrowing by a quarter point to 1.25%. That's the highest level since the global financial crisis in 2009. The pound slumped 1% against the dollar following the announcement. Currently, inflation in Britain stands at 9%, the highest level in 40 years. Data this week also revealed the first rise in the UK unemployment rate since the end of 2020. The war in Ukraine and subsequent energy crisis, as well as an economy still battered by the pandemic, are among the main reasons for Britain's economic woes. Britain says the European Court of Human Rights overstepped its powers in grounding a flight of asylum seekers just minutes before it was about to take off to Rwanda. Deputy Prime Minister Dominic Raab says London will keep working to make sure the deportation flights will take place in the weeks ahead. The UK government is planning to send migrants arriving in the country thousands of kilometres away to Rwanda. But the decision has triggered massive criticism from the UN, the Church of England and rights groups. And on Tuesday, the European Court cancelled the first flight with a last-minute ruling. The legal battle has led some in Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Conservative Party to call for Britain to pull out of the European Convention on Human Rights. But Raab says for now, London will stay in the convention.
Grounded right before takeoff from a military airport in southwest England, as the legal wrangling over the fate of those due to be deported played out. The crew of the £500,000 taxpayer-funded flight to Rwanda soon realized they weren't going anywhere, as an 11th-hour intervention by the European Human Rights Council granted a reprieve to most of the seven Middle Eastern asylum seekers on board, to the delight of critics of the government's immigration policy.
I was delighted. It really instilled my confidence in the judicial system that people could actually pick out favourable politics and look behind that and identify potential breaches of human rights.
A defiant UK Prime Minister, though, says he is pushing on with his policy and that he may now contemplate withdrawing from the European Convention on Human Rights.
What we want to do is to show the people traffickers that they're breaking the law, they're risking people's lives, and it won't work anyway. Now, will it be necessary to change some laws to help us as we go along? It may very well be.
At the moment, the UK's Interior Ministry forcibly removes anyone it deems inadmissible to claim asylum in the UK on a one-way charter flight to Rwanda and houses them at facilities like this one in the capital, Kigali, a policy that has drawn fierce criticism from charities to the Church of England to rights activists.
Well, the government argument is they're doing this to put people traffickers out of business, but people such as yourself want the policy scrapped altogether. Why?
Immigration, asylum, and human rights are not at the top of the priority of this government's way of working with others, you know, less fortunate than themselves. We see the situation in Rwanda as being dressed up as something that it's absolutely not. I still have clients who are Rwandan refugees.
The UK has reportedly paid cash-strapped Rwanda $148 million up front for the deportation deal and plans on making additional payments to the East African country based on the number of asylum seekers it deports.
The UK government says it's ready to do anything, including changing the law to make those deportation flights happen. But for now, a respite for desperate asylum seekers facing a terrifying future. Saeed Bourizza, London.
Moving on, Russia, Turkey and Iran have met again under the Astana format to discuss Syria. The three parties have reaffirmed commitment to the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the Arab country. In a joint statement following the 18th such meeting, the three countries condemned the increased activities of terrorist groups in Syria. They said they're determined to continue working together to combat terrorism in the Arab country. The three countries said they have agreed to make further efforts to ensure calm in the de-escalation area of Syria's Idlib province. According to the joint statement, the next Astana meeting on Syria will be held in Kazakhstan in the second half of this year. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reports that the Palestinian leadership informed the U.S. administration of its refusal to hold a Palestinian-Israeli meeting during the planned visit of U.S. President Joe Biden to the region, as long as the Israeli occupation will not recognize the so-called two-state solution. Our correspondent Mona Kandil reports from Ramallah.
Ahead of a planned visit by U.S. President Joe Biden to the region next month, Israeli media revealed that the American administration had raised the possibility of holding a meeting between the Palestinian Authority and Israel, but the Palestinians have rejected the idea. According to the Israeli daily Haaretz, the Palestinians informed the Americans that they would only accept such a meeting if all parties agreed on advancing a two-state solution based on the 1967 borders.
The Biden administration, with its offer to have a kind of a meeting between the Palestinians and the Israelis, is trying just to get out of the hawk. It's trying to say that they are interested in doing something in the area. At the same time, what they are offering is just a kind of a arrangements, economic arrangements, to make life a little bit much better under the occupation. Now, the Palestinian Authority and the Palestinian in general are aiming at ending the occupation and establishing a Palestinian state.
The Palestinians, however, want from the Americans to reopen the U.S. consulate in East Al-Quds and to remove the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, from the U.S. terror list. These demands had been made during a meeting between Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas and Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs Barbara Leaf in Ramallah.
Biden's visit carries with it many risks, including shaping the situation in the region in favor of U.S. interests and those of Israel. We have demanded from the U.S. some issues that it can make unilaterally and don't require hollow meetings. It's clear the U.S. will be ignoring the major cause, which is the Palestinian cause.
On Tuesday, the White House confirmed Biden's first trip to West Asia region next month, during which he will visit the occupied Palestine, followed by a trip to Saudi Arabia. Israel's foreign minister has said that his country was looking to Biden's trip next month to help improve relations with Saudi Arabia. U.S. President Joe Biden is planning a visit to Saudi Arabia as part of the Riyadh summit. Biden says he will be focusing on Israel as a key issue for talks during his Saudi visit. Palestinians, on the other hand, say the Biden's visit to the region would only be symbolic. Mona Qandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Iran urges the UN nuclear agency to drop its past allegations that the country that accused the country of running a nuclear program with a possible military dimension. Tehran says the so-called PMD case of Iran's nuclear program has been closed under the 2015 deal, also known as the JCPOA, and reopening the case will hinder efforts to revive the agreement. The remarks were made by the chief of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami. The official said the PMD allegations against Iran's nuclear program are based on fabricated information provided to the agency by the Israeli regime. Islami's remarks come after the IAEA passed a resolution against Iran last week. The resolution called on Iran to provide answers to traces of uranium enrichment found at three undeclared sites. Tehran described the resolution as politically motivated and scaled back its cooperation with the agency by switching off a number of monitoring cameras in its nuclear sites. That brings an end to our World Bulletin for this hour.
You. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Research shows natural infection with Omicron doesn't produce a strong immune response, so people can quickly become infected. We now present you an article written jointly by Linda Geddes and Nicola Davis. The piece is titled Data Suggests UK at Start of New COVID Wave Driven by BA4 and BA5. If you thought that COVID-19 was dead and gone, then think again. Early signs indicate that the United Kingdom may be at the start of a new wave of COVID infections driven by BA4 and BA5. While new data suggests these variants may have evolved to refavor infecting lung tissue, which could make them more dangerous. So what can we expect in the coming weeks and months? Although BA2 continues to account for the bulk of UK infections, data from the Office for National Statistics up to 2nd of June suggests that COVID cases may be starting to rise again in England and Northern Ireland, driven by an increase in BA4 and BA5 infections. The trends were uncertain in Wales and Scotland. Also gaining ground in the United Kingdom are BA5.1, a child of BA5, and the BA2.12.1, subvariant, America's dominant COVID strain, which the UK Health Security Agency is monitoring. BA4 and BA5 were officially designated variants of concern in the United Kingdom on 20th of May, having first been detected in South Africa during January and February of this year. According to the latest Office of National Statistics data, about 1 in 70 people in England were estimated to have COVID in the week leading up to 2nd of June. In Northern Ireland, it was about 1 in 65, in Wales about 1 in 75, and in Scotland about 1 in 40. In South Africa, BA4 and BA5 have been responsible for a second wave of Omicron infections beginning at the start of May, which now appears to be flattening off. However, South Africa wasn't hit by the highly transmissible BA2 variant in the same way the United Kingdom was. And scientists had hoped that high levels of immunity from recent infection with BA2 and booster vaccines might be enough to prevent these newer variants from gaining a significant foothold in this country. However, with immunity from third vaccine doses waning in most population groups, and only the over 75s and extremely vulnerable groups having been offered spring booster doses, this cannot be guaranteed. Neither is recent infection with the BA1 or BA2 Omicron variants necessarily protection against reinfection with BA4 or BA5. According to research published in Science on Tuesday, 14th of June, natural infection with Omicron doesn't produce a strong immune response, regardless of whether scientists look at antibodies or T cells, meaning that people who have already recovered from an Omicron infection can quickly become reinfected. The findings from Professor Danny Altman at Imperial College London and colleagues may help to explain why infection levels have remained high in countries such as the United Kingdom, despite so many already having been infected with it. According to preliminary data from Kai Sato at the University of Tokyo and colleagues, BA4, BA5 and BA2.12.1 may have evolved to refavor infection of lung cells rather than upper respiratory tract tissue, making them more similar to earlier variants, such as Alpha or Delta. The propensity of earlier Omicron variants to prefer infecting non-lung tissue may be one reason why infections tend to be milder in most people. Dr. Stephen Griffin, a virologist at the University of Leeds, says it looks as though these things are switching back to the more dangerous form of infection, so going lower down in the lung. Sato's experiments indicate that BA4, BA5 and BA2.12.1 replicate more efficiently in human lung cells than BA2, while further experiments in hamsters suggest that BA4 and BA5 may cause more severe disease. These variants also appear to have a higher reproduction number than BA2, while further experiments by Sato's laboratory indicate that BA4 and BA5 may be resistant to immunity induced by earlier Omicron infections, similar to Professor Altman's findings. Sato said, "Altogether, our investigation suggests that the risk of these Omicron variants, particularly BA4 and BA5, to global health is potentially greater than that of the original BA2. It also put paid to the idea that the virus is on the verge of merely turning into common cold. Griffin said it clearly isn't, and there's no pressure on it to do that, really." Even so, the rise of BA4 and BA5 and other subvariants by no means put Britain's back to square one. Britain's population is, by and large, highly vaccinated, and previous infection with other variants will also count for something. However, those who haven't been vaccinated remain vulnerable. Professor Tulio de Oliveira, the director of the Centre for Epidemic Response and Innovation at Stellenbosch University in South Africa, pointed out that BA4 and BA5 wave has been less deadly than any of the previous waves to have hit his country. In part, this could be because hospital COVID wards were largely empty when it started, but it is also probably the result of high levels of population immunity. However, hospitalizations and deaths are only part of the picture. Long COVID cases continue to rise in the United Kingdom. According to the latest Office of National Statistics data, 2 million people in the United Kingdom are thought to be living with long COVID, the highest figure since official surveys began. So what to do about it? Data on the efficacy of booster vaccines against these newer subvariants is still lacking, but if previous experience is anything to go by, they are likely to largely reinstate immune protection, at least against hospitalization and death. A fourth dose of the vaccine is expected to be offered to over 65s, frontline healthcare and social care workers, care home residents and staff, and clinically vulnerable people from the autumn. With luck, BA4 and BA5 will present just a minor blip in the UK's transition out of the COVID crisis. But their emergence is a reminder that smooth sailing is by no means guaranteed. Furthermore, experts say that while three doses of a COVID jab help to protect individuals against severe outcomes should they catch Omicron, previous infections can affect their immune response. Professor Rosemary Boyton of Imperial College London says, "If you were infected during the first wave, then you can't boost your immune response if you have an Omicron infection." Researchers also found an Omicron infection offered little extra protection against catching the variant again. Professor Rosemary Boyton said, "When Omicron started flying around the country, people kept saying that's okay. That will improve people's immunity. What we're saying is it's not a good booster of immunity." Researchers said the findings may help to explain why reinfections with Omicron over a short period of time have been so frequent, adding the findings were also important for vaccine development. Writing in the journal Science, the researchers reported how they followed the vaccination and infection experiences of 731 triple vaccinated healthcare workers in the United Kingdom from March of 2020 to January of 2022. The team then used blood samples collected from participants in the weeks after their third dose of vaccine to explore their antibody and T-cell responses towards the Omicron variant BA1. The participants varied considerably in terms of their COVID history, including whether they had a previous COVID infection and, if so, the variant involved. The results suggested that regardless of the participants' previous infection history, a few weeks after their third COVID jab, their levels of T-cells against Omicron proteins were poor, while levels of antibodies against Omicron proteins were lower than against other variants. But previous infections also mattered. Among other findings, the team reported infection with Omicron increased protection against future infection with other variants. However, it only offered a limited boost to protection against another Omicron infection, a response that was actually weakened among those who had also previously had the original strain of the virus. The team said the results held for both antibody and T-cell responses and suggested those who caught COVID in the first wave of the pandemic did not gain a boost to their immune response should they subsequently catch Omicron.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Lovely listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. In the studio with me, I have the privilege and honor of being joined by Sister Salma Khalfan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
Thank you so very much for being with us, sharing your time with us.
The pleasure is mine.
Thank you. On the last few episodes of Muslim Lady, we were talking about how the teachings of Islam are actually empowering women. And from my understanding is that a great portion of that happens through enabling the women to grow, right? And through that growth, whether it's intellectual, emotional, spiritual, she becomes empowered, yeah. Right? And we talked about various dimensions of this growth, how it happens through respect, through love, through mercy, through times that you feel like, you know what, this guy, he doesn't deserve it, yeah. But I'm gonna be the bigger person. Yeah. And I'm going to, I'm going to show him how to be good at this.
It's all the better if you say that I'm going to show Allah.
Exactly. Right? All of that with the intention of I'm going to prove to myself and to my Lord that I can be the better person.
In this world also, you'll get that happiness. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's not as if you have to wait for the
to die.
Hereafter. Yeah. Allah has promised good doers, a portion of it they will receive from in this world as well.
So I believe that you have other points to add to the discussion we've been having, and I'm really excited to hear that.
One of the other points that we should not disregard is the fact that a wife having expectations, the wrong kind of expectations. Oh, yeah. She thinks that with the expectations, she'll get a lot.
Yeah, she has the upper hand.
And she can fight for it, and then she can be empowered. But that's something that is so like... short-lived. Yeah. Wrong expectations is something that is very prevalent sometimes in marriages, that when a woman comes and she feels that now she's very much, near to her husband, and now she can say anything that she wants, like, I want this, okay, I get it. In the first days, maybe she receives all the good things that she expects from her husband. Then she sees that, no, it doesn't work out like this. Mm. It's not like my say is heard always. And then she has the wrong kind of expectations and she lashes out and she spoils everything, which the husband can't even probably afford.
Yeah.
So wrong expectations are something that, you know, it spells the love of the world. The love of the world is the seed of the root of all the evil, they say. Yeah?
Yes.
Hubbud dunya ra'asu kullu khati'a. Everything is rooted on the hubbed dunya. So hubbed dunya should be the minimum. The hubbed dunya should be for the hubbed akhirat. And when that hubbed dunya is for the hubbed akhirat, one will see that everything is balanced, you know.
So we use all those material gains for the purpose of our hereafter as a means, as a tool.
Yeah. In fact, you know, the khaffafu talhaqul, the lighter you are, the more you'll soar higher.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, and a beautiful saying of Imam Ali is that when you are satisfied with what you have, then you are the richest person.
Yeah,
a rich person feels very empowered, that I have power, I have property. So a powerful woman, when she's satisfied, she will feel that power.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so she should be satisfied. Like Hazrat Fatima Zahra, look at her. Like, okay, she's our role model. We can't say she was Hazrat Fatima. She did what human beings would be able to do, had the capacity to do, because she was an angelic woman. If she did what she could do really, we would be left stunned.
Yeah.
But this is what she could do, and she knows we could do too.
Uh-huh.
So giving her wedding gown, the way of Allah, giving all her food, the 3 days, you know, with her children to the fakir, miskin, and asir. That's a commendable thing that a human being can take a step forward and try.
Toward that direction.
Exactly. Yeah. So don't have the wrong expectations. Request between this, having wrong expectations, sometimes it leads to complaints also. Look at, you know, so and so. Look at our this, you know, our house situation. We don't have this, we don't have that. Okay. Now, okay, we want our furniture to be replaced, or sometimes they're right things. For example, our table is broken. We need to buy another table. But if you go and see, the minimum should be done. Maybe mend the table, you know. Or if the person sometimes doesn't have that money enough to do something for the wife. So the wrong expectation, the wife should be smart enough to know that, for example, this man, you know, like, feels so bad about it when I ask him, because he knows that he can't, the man of the house, you know, he doesn't feel that man of the house, that I can't do anything for my wife. So he breaks him, you know, he breaks his ego. So a woman should be smart enough to be satisfied. That empowers her. Satisfaction is a beautiful thing all around, you know, like, even if you want to get closer to Allah, then we don't utilize these animalistic qualities too much. Like, for example, you know, like food and luxuries and everything. Then we get disattached to the material world. Then we can move along to the spiritual
world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Muslim Lady here on IRIB English Radio. We're going to go for a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back. Here in the studio with Sister Salma Khalfan, we've been talking about how Islam empowers women through many of its laws and principles, but mostly by means of growth and presenting her with instructions that can help her attain that empowerment by growing and becoming bigger. And Sister Salma, you were talking about one of the points that can help empower women, which is a very interesting way to look at it, because I've actually never seen or never come across this viewpoint before, is through her contentment. For her to be satisfied, or at least not pressure her man.
Yeah, not having the wrong expectations.
Wrong expecting expectations,
is okay, but wrong expectations should not be had. And the best way to curb it is to have the satisfaction. That's the best way. So sometimes a woman can have expectations. For example, if she wants certain things at home, you know, all the better if the woman tries to learn how to be so, like, you know, satisfied with whatever is brought. Because, you know, one thing is that a man is the breadwinner. In Islam, it's very much emphasized that a man should do his job It's wajib for him also. So a woman should expect, like, for example, if the nafaqah is provided, you know, what are the features of the nafaqah? What are the limitations of it? You know, all these things. If it's not done in the proper way, then she has the right to tell him. But the same thing applies here with respect and adab, that, you know, these things are, you know, lacking in our home. For example,
Food. Don't tell him, oh, you're so useless. You never get anything for us. What kind of a man are you?
Yeah, exactly. This will spoil forever. Completely. Yeah. But if you tell him that, look, this is important to bring it home, because then we wouldn't be able to do without it. It's your children at stake here. See? So it can be like useful way of telling him in a proper logical way. And the opposite is to appreciate the little things and makes the home a very beautiful environment to live in. So little things that the man will bring, you know, he'll be encouraged. Like, you know, everybody has this this instinct in them that la in shakartum la azidannakum. When you thank Allah, He makes you more, your capacity more, He gives you more ni'mat and things like that. Your husband, like in a way, like he's providing for you, so you appreciate it. Man lam yashkur al makhluk lam yashkur al khaliq. One who doesn't thank a human being, creation does not thank Allah. So Allah wants you to thank a person. And what better person could you be than the husband at home, right?
Yeah.
Who is the breadwinner.
Just for him to see this attitude of gratitude in his woman makes him feel that I am living with a woman with the right mindset.
Yeah.
She's not constantly nagging and complaining. Or she's proud. A positive-minded woman.
Or she's not proud.
Exactly. She's not arrogant. She's not constantly focusing on the negative aspects of, I mean, no one's perfect, but if we keep zooming on that, we're going to miss out on all the actually perfect things that they do have.
Yeah.
And for him to see that he's living with such a mentally sophisticated person really makes life so rich.
Yeah.
So rich.
And here you don't even need so much education, you know. It says you don't need to learn ABCs of it and 1 + 1 = 2. You just have to have the right mindset, you know, that how you react when somebody gives you. It's such a fitri thing, yeah? It's so like natural. When somebody gives you, a small child, something, they look at you and smile, right?
Like,
so that means like a
world.
Thank you. So it's very, very important to show your appreciation in little things also, so that the husband can also feel that, I'm not wasting my time and I like doing my duty.
Yes, exactly. You know? Such a good encouragement.
Yeah. Because sometimes they feel it's a burden on them. They don't want to use their money because the woman feels, okay, you brought this, you didn't bring this. You should have brought this also.
Yes.
They add it for me, you know.
Yes.
This is the only thing you bring. People,
that's
you know,
it?
They have, yeah, that's it. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. So even if you go out, for example, if you go in a kind of a journey together, whatever he can provide for you, you thank him.
Yeah. If then he's doing his best, really acknowledge it for that.
Yeah.
And make him feel like, you know what, your best is enough.
Yeah.
This is all I want from you.
Yeah, I wish it would really keep on doing. This attitude could set into the woman's heart. But, you know, when it starts like the way I spoke about my earlier lectures, it starts when you are being too close to the husband without having the ayat of respect. If you respect from start, then you'll see that respect, you know, brings about different kind of effects. And this is one of the effects. You appreciate. Otherwise, you'll feel, oh, he's my friend, my closest friend. He doesn't need a thank you. Like, for example, when two friends are talking, they don't do so much like thank yous to each other, right?
Yeah.
Although it's a very good thing. You should always, but whoever does a small thing for you, it's encouraged to thank them for it and appreciate and acknowledge it. But sometimes when you see two very close friends, they'll find it normal, you know? Like, they would really stress on the thank you. But here we are told to stress and appreciate because he's working hard. And then he'll feel that by going out and toiling and, you know, using all my energy is not a waste of time for me.
Yes, exactly.
It's something that my family needs and I'm so happy about it.
See? Yes.
So a woman can do a lot. She can really be empowered. She does this. She's helping herself. She's helping her husband. She's helping her household. She's helping the community at large. And she's helping the society.
Yes, absolutely.
So these kind of beautiful attitudes, you know, that that can be easily come up in her rather than trying for it so much. Because she has that quality of emotionality in her to think more, to love more. You know, to be very intricate, you know, so she can do all this in a very beautiful way, a very creative way.
The different ways that she can integrate that love is so important. And once she, like you said, if she's a smart woman and she does it properly based on the instructions of Islam, because Islam is a very detail-oriented religion and it really does cover every aspect of your life. It tells you how to greet him, how to speak to him, how to interact with him. How to receive him, how to react to him. And if we really take all of these into consideration, which are very much in accordance with our nature as women, we'll see that, hey, it's not that hard after all. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's doable and it's so rewarding, most important of all. It's super duper rewarding. In case you guys are wondering why we're only talking about the women's responsibilities or what women should do, just a quick reminder that this is Muslim Lady after all. I'm pretty sure we have other shows that talk about what the man has to do in return, how it's not even her job to cook or clean at home. And if she's doing it, she's really doing it out of a kindness of her heart because she loves you. She loves her babies. She wants you guys to be safe and happy and taken care of.
She loves being creative.
Exactly. She loves being creative. She loves expressing her love in this way. And that's a whole other topic, a whole different aspect or the other side of the same coin that we're going to have to talk about on other episodes of different segments. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so very much, Sister Salma.
You're welcome.
And thank you to our listeners for being with us. Until another salam, I leave you all in the care and protection of the Almighty.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Limelight. Brussels has vowed to respond with all measures at its disposal as Britain's Foreign Secretary Liz Truss sets out plan to make changes and rewrite the Northern Ireland Protocol. We now present you an article written jointly by Heather Stewart, Jennifer Rankin and Lisa O'Carroll. The piece is titled, EU Raises Spectre of Trade War if UK Rewrites Northern Ireland Protocol. The European Commission has raised the specter of an economically damaging trade war with the United Kingdom, pledging to respond with all measures at its disposal if Foreign Secretary Liz Truss presses ahead with a plan to rewrite the Northern Ireland Protocol. The Foreign Secretary set out plans on Tuesday, 17th of May, to table a bill that would make changes to the protocol, including waiving all checks on goods flowing from Great Britain to Northern Ireland, where they are not destined for the Republic of Ireland. She said the UK government still hoped to agree the changes it believes are necessary, calling these comprehensive and reasonable, adding, "Our preference is to reach a negotiated outcome with the European Union. We have worked tirelessly to that end and will continue to do so." But she claimed the protocol in its current form jeopardised the stability of the Good Friday Agreement, which she said was under strain, and the government would act unilaterally if necessary. Liz Truss said, "To respond to the very grave and serious situation in Northern Ireland, we are clear that there is a necessity to act to ensure the institutions can be restored as soon as possible." Part of the government's motivation is to placate the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP, which is refusing to enter a power-sharing government with Sinn Féin at Stormont unless the protocol is altered. The Democratic Unionist Party's Westminster leader, Geoffrey Donaldson, said Liz Truss's statement was welcome, if overdue, step, that is, a significant move towards addressing the problems created by the Northern Ireland Protocol and getting power sharing based upon a cross-community consensus up and running again. Geoffrey Donaldson said his party would like to see progress on the legislation in days and weeks and not months. Liz Truss called for the EU's top official in charge of relations with the United Kingdom, Maroš Šefčovič, to be given a rewritten negotiating mandate that would allow the protocol to be revised. However, Maroš Šefčovič responded to Liz Truss's statement by issuing a veiled warning that the United Kingdom could lose its free trade arrangements with the European Union if it went ahead. Šefčovič, a European Commission vice president who has been leading talks on changes to the protocol, said Liz Truss's proposals raise significant concerns, adding, "Unilateral actions contradicting an international agreement are not acceptable." He said in a statement, "Should the United Kingdom decide to move ahead with a bill disapplying constitutive elements of the protocol as announced today by the UK government, the European Union will need to respond with all measures at its disposal." According to Catherine Barnard, a European Union law professor at the University of Cambridge, the EU could hit UK goods with tariffs within 7 days of legal action or freeze the entire trade deal agreed with Prime Minister Boris Johnson in 2020. Two of three immediate weapons at its disposal. Legal action against the United Kingdom that was frozen as a goodwill gesture last year would probably be restarted. Liz Truss said the new legislation will be published within weeks, including plans to create a green channel allowing goods to be exported from Great Britain to Northern Ireland without checks, as long as they're not destined for the Republic of Ireland. She said this would create a dual regulatory system that encompasses either European Union or British regulation, as those businesses chose. That reflects its unique status of having a close relationship with the European Union while being part of the United Kingdom's single market. The legislation would also let the United Kingdom determine tax and spending in Northern Ireland. Liz Truss pointed to the Chancellor's recent decision to cut value-added tax VAT on green energy installations, which she said he was unable to implement in Northern Ireland. Brussels sources say no decisions have been taken about how to respond if Liz Truss does legislate, and express hope that Britain would turn to the negotiating table to discuss changes proposed by the EU. It was suggested that if the government tabled the bill, Brussels would issue a formal warning and launch a process to decide on retaliatory measures. European Union insiders believe that Britain has never seriously engaged with what they see as far-reaching proposals to lighten customs and administrative checks made by Mara Shevchevich last October. However, Liz Truss dismissed these in the House of Commons. She said, "Their current proposals are not able to address the fundamental concerns. In fact, it is our assessment that they would go backward from the situation we have today with the standstill." European Union sources also point out that a change in mandate would require unanimous sign-off by all member states of the European Union. They said there was no desire to change Shevchevich's mandate to enable wholesale changes to the protocol, a matter Liz Truss described as a fundamental issue. The senior EU diplomat poured cold water on this idea, saying, "The European Union doesn't have a mandate, the protocol is the mandate." The resurgence of the Northern Ireland row with Britain is seen by the European Union as an unwelcome distraction at a time of tension and conflict between Russia and Ukraine. David McAllister, a German Christian Democrat, MEP, who chairs the European Parliament's Foreign Affairs Committee, said, "If you look at what is happening in the middle of Europe, a fully-fledged military operation, a horrible, horrific war, and we're discussing again and again issues in Northern Ireland, which I believe could be solved with a bit of goodwill in London." Richard Neal, the influential chair of the US Congressional Committee, who is heading to London and Brussels in the coming days in an attempt to supposedly head off further deterioration of Anglo-Irish relations, said, "Northern Ireland shouldn't be held hostage in the political process. Rather, all parties must stay the course and continue to work together to find durable solutions." Richard Neal is leading a delegation of at least half a dozen US congressional representatives to Europe amid rising tension over the Northern Ireland Protocol. Richard Neal's trip will take in London, Brussels, Dublin, and Belfast.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.